It's Power Hour LSU.
Alrighty. Just right now, in the grand scheme of things, just give me your best let's go. Just give it to me. I want you right now, sitting at your home, to just bring it. I kind of feel like being a little chill tonight. It is a glorious Tuesday. We might be getting our last rendition of the annual LSU versus Florida matchup. This is the team I hate the most in the Southeastern Conference. It's not even close. For me, it's not even close. I don't know about you. But the truth is, I have my favorite film study analyst joining us a little bit later. And on top of that, I have some bad news that LSU lost a somewhat significant, but not significant, defensive tackle from the team today. It is pretty sad when you see this happen, but Sadir Mitchell is no longer with LSU. So what happened? Well, I don't know all the details. I really don't. But where did Sadir Mitchell play? He played at Texas. Why did he come to LSU? To play for Bo Davis. And to find somewhere new to play because Texas's defensive tackle room is always deep. And Bo Davis leaves, Kyle Williams comes in, and he has his own way of playing defensive tackle. To use Occam's razor, which is the simplest solution to a problem, that is probably what happened. Now, is there something extracurricular that we don't know about? Maybe so. Maybe so. So, the truth is, whether you're watching this on Facebook, if you are watching this on Facebook, please share it. I'm trying my best to grow on Facebook. Mr. Zuck does not like me. The truth is, it's not really that big of a loss. It's not. Sadir Mitchell was really good during spring. He dominated quite a few spring practices. And the truth is, that's okay. Good for you. But games are not played in the spring. They're just not. And for me, the LSU defensive tackle room has been really good. Arguably, the best defensive tackle room they have had during the Brian Kelly era. So, you give Kyle Williams a lot of credit, and you give Bernard Gooden a lot of credit, because that's one reason why Sadir Mitchell left. Bernard Gooden, they're different styles of players. They really aren't the same type of defensive tackle, but we want Dominic McKinley to be the reason why Sadir Mitchell isn't playing. And Dominic McKinley, up to this point, has been pretty daggum good for LSU. Ahmad Bro, in his New Jersey number 16, has been good. So far, Rashard Lawrence, yeah, he had a penalty in this last game, but Rashard Lawrence has been fine. He's gotten pushed around a little bit, but he's been fine. All DTs do at some point. And then on top of that, you get to me, the most interesting player is Walter Mathis, number 91. He has played in both games up to this point. He is one of only a few true freshmen who could say that. So for me, I am really excited about this defensive tackle room moving forward. Is it Glenn Dorsey, Marlon Favorite level good? Maybe not. With Ricky Jean-Francois, the number 3 guy? Probably not. but it's still very good. And Bedard Gooden has been excellent through two games. Okay. So there you go. Oh, did I say Rashard Lawrence? I meant to say Glenn Dorsey and the great number 99, Marlon Favorite, and Ricky Jean Francois coming off the bench for that 07 team. So there you go. Now we move on to me, the story, which is the LSU offense. And that's why I wanted Max Toscano to join us, and he will be joining us here shortly. So the truth here, when it comes to the LSU offense, I have done so many film studies. We've done two LSU offensive film studies. We did the Garrett Nussmeier passing game film study. Then we did the Garrett Nussmeier LSU rushing game film study. And the LSU offensive line not being great isn't a shock to anyone. And I actually blame myself because I overhyped this LSU offense after Clemson, even though the red flags were there. 5.1 yards per play isn't that great. 4.4 average depth of target. You really can't know anything about an offensive line when those numbers are that low. So we were just playing very quick, and our defense was playing amazing. And that will probably be a style that we play moving forward. I would also say Georgia, a team that I've watched quite a bit, done a film study on every game, every offensive player that they have, for the most part. I'm no Brooks Austin when it comes to that team, but I'll tell you that Georgia is doing the same thing. They're playing quick game. Their offensive line is also a mess. So, you know, this really isn't a shock. I think a lot of you were shocked that the offense did not play up to its standard. So the big question is, do they get Braylon Moore back for Florida? I don't know. I released a few thoughts on Patreon on what I'm hearing about Braylon, and obviously it would really help out this team if Braylon Moore is back. And it's not necessarily because Braylon is Olin Krutz or Lloyd Cushenberry. It's more so that we don't have to play DJ Chester and Paul Mabenga and pretty much everyone on that offensive line that is struggling right now. So please keep in mind that it's very important when it comes to evaluating this very difficult position that there are so many different factors, and one of which is Garrett did not play his best. He just did not play his best. And it's funny because the film analysts that I've had on this channel are very pro-Nuss. Okay, very, very, very pro-Nuss. In fact, I would say most of the film community is pro-Nuss. They think Garrett can be a high-level NFL quarterback. But for our next guest, the Louisiana Tech game was a step back. So we will not be doing our Broadway comps again tonight, even though I would love to. His name is Max Toscano. What's up, Max?
Oh, man, I had so many lined up for Nussmeier and the LSU run game and, you know, just, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I'm doing great. How about you, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good. And here's something else. If you want someone that covers Joe Burrow's Bengals, Max, that's your main thing now is Bengals, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of main things, right? It's the Bengals, it's tight ends. I'm doing some jet stuff now. I don't even know. Like, you know, I never could have predicted all the places I would have ended up. But yeah, that's a big thing I'm doing. I got something coming out within the next couple of days, probably about week one. They were lucky to get away with it, but you know, it's, you know, the difference between the playoffs and not making the playoffs last year was winning and getting lucky against Patriots, and they didn't. Yeah. So, you know, I'm fine with it. They're, you know, I think we kind of know what they are. But yeah, it's just, you know, a lot of different stuff.
And Max is like me, man. We like, and I should have cleared this before I had you on. I like my defensive ends to be thick.
Yes.
Something else. Oh, okay. There you go. there you go. Max likes thick football players. It matters now with the light boxes. We could talk about that a little bit later. But Max, your initial thoughts watching LSU versus Louisiana Tech an offense that sputtered all night.
Yeah, I mean, Dustmeyer didn't play well. I'm not really necessarily all that concerned about it. Okay. I think the it's not quite the step into the true hyper elite robot that I thought he could potentially become. But I think there are a lot of external challenges too. I think the offensive line really, really struggled, especially in the run game, which is just awful, awful stuff. But you know, the stuff that we saw from Nussmeier were a lot of inaccuracy, which is not a normal issue for him, and a lot of just effort mode, which is a bit of an issue. But at the same time, you can kind of see him flip a bit of a different switch than he got into against Clemson. I think when he went into effort mode last year and got into trouble, I think it was in a lot of situations where there was just nowhere to go with the football and the game was kind of slipping away. I think we saw that against Alabama. I think we definitely saw that against A&M. So that's, I think, something you see with a lot of quarterbacks, even really, really good ones. So just, you know, it's not great, but at the same time, I think, you know, these kids are human in the sense that he was playing Louisiana Tech and he kind of acted like it, which you don't want from a coaching perspective, but is not necessarily a concern for bigger games, because I think we know that he knows how to lock it in. He knows how to really elevate. We saw that against Ole Miss, I think, last year. More than anything, he was a superhero. So I'm not happy with it, but I'm not super concerned about him. It's the O-line and the run game. I just think it is so concerning at this point, and that's the thing I really came away worried about. I'm not worried about Garrett Nussmeier.
Yeah, I let me ask you this. So the first interception, or the interception to Barry and Brown down the sideline, I'm shocked that he just couldn't get enough on it. What do you think could be the issue there? I mean, do you think there could be something underlying, or has that always been a problem for Garrett in your mind?
No, it's not. It's never really been a problem, and I don't think there's anything underlying. I just think he flubbed a throw. It's the kind of thing that happens a lot of times. You know, it's something that ends up in the dirt or something that ends up going out of bounds, but sometimes it gets picked off and we kind of end up getting a bit more of a view of it and getting a bit more putting a bit more weight on it. I don't really, it just is what it is. I actually kind of liked it as a play. I think he made a nice play picking up the cloud corner and seeing that the safety wasn't getting over the top and ripping it. I just think that he just didn't get enough juice on the throw, and that's not something I'm worried about. He's got a great arm, so it's just, it was a great read, and he just didn't put enough juice on it. To me, from a process perspective, I think it was a positive play. It's just sometimes you miss a throw. It's hard to get around that. We see that all the time, even with the best quarterbacks.
Yeah. So before I show you a few different runs, I mean, people went crazy of your USC counter John Emery breakdown. I've not checked in on John Emery at UTSA. I hope it's going great. But I want to ask you about the run game as a whole. So I'm just going to give you the floor of what you think is actually wrong.
Everything. It's horrible. It's horrible. They're from an execution and physical perspective, they're losing at the line of scrimmage. They're getting knocked back. They're losing blocks. From an assignment perspective, they are screwing up against twists and front movements and pressures. There's no pickup there. Guys are getting free. From a design and teaching perspective, they, especially on outside zone, they don't get points right. There are situations in which they're running into unblockable support, which is a huge no-no. If you read the 49ers outside zone install, they have a plan to deal with unblockable support on every single wide zone tag that they have.
Okay, so before we continue, I know what you're talking about, but what is unblockable support?
It's just a guy that you can't get to just based on the math of your doubles and climbs. It's somebody that you can't get to with the line of scrimmage. So you either got a motion receiver in to crack him, which sometimes you do, or a lot of times you change who the mic point is so that you can push everything down a guy so that you can get to that guy and just change the configuration on the second level. You can't just be running into a nickel or safety who's playing the perimeter who doesn't have anybody to block them, because they're just going to make the tackle. Like, you can't, especially on outside zone. Like, there are some times you can leave guys on block, but not to the play side of a lateral play. You're just, everything is going right into that guy.
And so what do you do to fix that?
I mean, it's hard to say because, well, it's not that hard to say because I know exactly what to do, but you just got to be more literate in wide zone.
No, tell us exactly what to do.
Well, I mean, it depends on the formation. It depends on the rest of the tag. But there are three main things that people do to deal with it. And I'm sure we'll see this when we get to the clips potentially. They either, if there's a wide receiver to that side detached, what Shanahan calls, trying to get this in the camera, alert to short, which means that the quarterback's going to make a signal to him, or he just knows automatically, and he's going to short motion into a tight split so that he can dig that guy out. Or you can push the point so that one of the uncovered linemen, whether it's the tackle or the guard or the tight end, will climb to that guy instead of climbing to a different guy, which has a chain reaction across the second level, but it can usually be worked on. Or what they do in a lot of cases is they flip the run, which LSU can't really do as much when they're running it from gun, which is a problem that outside zone teams have when they're running it from gun. But a lot of smart outside zone teams do run. Texas is a good example of this.
Yeah.
UConn actually runs it a lot from gun.
Oh, Huskies.
And what they're doing is they're alerting to short, changing into a different run entirely, like duo, for instance, or they're pushing or pulling the point to get that guy blocked. There are just ways to do it. And you can't have it. It's like one of the number one, that and front side penetration are the number one and two no-nos of outside zone. And LSU is violating both of those principles pretty bad.
So I'll get to the end zone angle of this run by Caleb Jackson, but is there anything from, I'll slow-mo it too for you. Is there anything from this run in particular? I broke all these down in my film study from earlier, but you're my OZ expert, man.
Yeah, I mean, hold on. Let me see the play again. I have no short-term. I certainly have whatever the opposite of a photographic memory is, I have it. So that's sort of tough. If you see here, though, the safety to the boundary is out of the fit. So the support defender becomes the corner, which means that they should double to him, and he's not blocked, and he makes the play. Now, he's in the fit late, which is tough. You can't really block both of those guys. So when you're running it into a nub like that, if we go back to the pre-snap, like, and we'll see this on the end zone too.
Yeah.
But you can't really block both the corner and the safety there. So what I personally would do here is I would flip the run and alert to short to the slot. So I would have the slot block that safety that comes down in the middle, and I would have the tackle to climb to that linebacker that's right there in the middle. It's hard to see without drawing on it. But this is a situation which you would probably can the run because they have both the corner and the safety to the side of the run.
Yeah, where you're trying
to run it. So, you know, that's tough. Normally you have to leave the corner unblocked regardless, just because you don't have the numbers for it and you're fine with him making a tackle. But when you're running into a nub like that into the boundary, it's really hard because it's a condensed space. So he's going to force that back inside. If you see here, hold on, can you pause this real quick?
Yeah.
So the guard is uncovered. I don't know if they move and that changes, because again, I have no photographic memory whatsoever, but normally you would have the two tight ends double that end and climb to whoever that support guy is. Then you would have the tackle and guard double that guy who's head up on the tackle, and whoever's uncovered, hopefully, honestly, in this case, it should be the tackle, climbs to that linebacker who's there in the B gap.
Yeah.
And cuts him off. And then on the backside, you have those two guys combo on the nose and then climb to that backside linebacker. And then you would have the slot climb up to that backside support guy.
And when you mean the slot, you mean someone unpictured here, correct?
Yeah. The slot to the field.
That would be Nick, who you can't see here.
Right.
So just for clarity, you would want 79 and 56 to take on the zero tech nose.
Yep.
And then Chester climbed to pick up 9.
Ideally, yeah. Okay. Ideally, yeah. But if you can't get that, then the back is tasked with reading that guy and making him right. Because if that guy can get over the top, you can cut back off him. But like, as you can see here, they're running right into the, first of all, like, I don't, you should never block backwards on outside zone. And if you watch Sharp, he blocks backwards to double.
Right.
Never do that because it doesn't unfold the play and it collapses the front side. So there's no, like, you can't climb to the support because he's blocking backwards. And then that leaves Green one-on-one on that outside guy. This is not how you should run it from this formation against this look. And even then, you're going to have to deal with that unblocked safety. So I would ideally flip it and have the slot crack down on that safety to his side, and then you're fine. Then you're fine numbers-wise.
So you're saying Nick go block number 8?
Right. Or... this would be a situation from a YY nub like this, with the two tight ends, or even a normal nub with just 3x1. It's 2x2 nub. So that's a little different, but, you know, at the end of the day, not really. So you have, again, this is hard to word without drawing on it.
Yeah.
But because of the corner and that safety being in the fit there, you're just going to have this is not necessarily standard. In all outside zone from all formations, but with a nub formation, you have to be a little bit different about the corner than you would from others, especially right. When you're running into the boundary like this. So I would flip this, and I would have, if we can, when we get to the end zone again, I'll go over who would block this. So you would just make a can call. This is what the Shanahan guys would do.
Yes.
They would flip it. So then they would have the center reach the nose. They would have the guard, the play side guard, which is 56 Thompson, and the right tackle Davis. They would double on the D end, and Davis or whoever ends up uncovered, probably Davis, would climb to that inside linebacker, I believe number 9.
Yes. So when he, I just want clarity for my viewers here really quickly.
Mm-hmm, of course.
When Max says flip it, he's saying run away from the way that we're running. So run to the right.
Right.
So with which coaches would say you're running away in theory of the strength call. So you're flipping it to the right.
Yeah.
So
it's going to go from closed side to open side.
Yeah. Now that you've mentioned, I should have brought this up in my breakdown. Now that you've mentioned it, it does make way more sense from a numbers perspective. God bless you. You blew my mind here. So 56 and 75 takes on the right side, play side in,
and then
climb to 9, baby. Let's go.
And then you don't necessarily need to, but it's better. The slot should be in a bit of a tighter split.
Yes. Max is saying that Garrett and Nick would need to communicate that Nick would be closer to where
They have to have this framework. I mean, I don't think they, if they taught it, Nussmeier would make the call.
Right.
But in
theory, you would have Nick closer to the eye of the tiger.
Right. You could have him just crash down really hard. I mean, he's athletic enough to do it. But like, you could also just short motion him instead of wasting him on a route, that you're not RPOing. And you could RPO the guy, but I don't love doing that either.
And then if you don't mind,
sure, no, dude, anything.
So on this play in particular, even with Bauer, because obviously in outside zone, basically everyone is stepping in the right direction. Basically on OZ plays, is it true that every blocker more often than not is stepping in the right direction, maybe outside of the backside tackle? Is that correct?
If they're doing it right.
Yes.
In this specific play, I mean, the backside tackle, they lock him. So they just have him man to man on that backside end,
right,
which is fine if you're reading whoever that B gap defender is, for an RPO, but you know, they're running this guy on a route. So it's just, it's tough to do, because if you're reading that backside guy, you don't, that backside second level defender, you don't have to block him, which means you can push the point front side to take that support front side. But they're not RPOing him and they're running into the unblockable support. So it just doesn't make any sense. Now, the only guy who blocks the way I would like this blocked, and he doesn't do this all, and none of these guys are consistent about it, is backside guard Thompson. If you watch him take those three lateral steps, hit the double, and then penetrate to the second level, that's how you want this block. If in as we go, you're going to see how vertical these guys step, and it's just the play doesn't get wide.
So what Max is saying, and if you guys want like a deeper breakdown of like offensive linemen and their steps, Mitchell Schwartz gives out a bunch of free game. And I actually learned this from him, that you really, on these OZs, you want that first step to be very lateral, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I want the first three steps to be lateral.
Right, because we're trying to widen things out.
Yeah. And so, like with Sharp here, he and the tackle should not be in a combination.
Ever on OZ.
Well, no, they should in certain end alignments, but not in this one. He and Green should be comboing.
Yes,
and because then look, Sharp's climbing to the backside safety instead of this front unblocked frontside support, that just does not make sense.
None.
So, like, I mean, like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? And it's just it's not necessarily his fault, because all these guys are doing things like this. So it's just teaching. It's, you know, it's like I'm working with a high school team right now that's installing outside zone for like the first time, and they have a bunch of kids who, like, you know, kind of don't really know how to play yet.
Right.
And they're making these mistakes. Barely. Yeah. Not as much.
Well, and the reason why I wanted you on tonight is, so you and I, it's interesting. We have had a bunch of private conversations about OZ. Okay, I have a friend who's a head coach.
That's playing football, by the way.
Okay, so you're with me. It is my favorite rush design. So, my buddy runs the Leach Air Raid, and he coaches in Europe, and they put up a lot of points and all of that. And he hates it. And I know he knows way more about ball than I ever will. But I'm like, no, I love it, baby. I'm a Shanahan.
Yeah, they haven't figured out light box run fits over there, have they?
No, they haven't. And he mentioned that very term. But it's interesting because you tweeted out something. Well, actually, two different interactions, because I said outside zone. I tweeted out that I responded to one of your tweets. I said outside zone might determine LSU's season. Whoa. But you said LSU was going to be a counter team this year. And I had thought that initially as well. But, you know, I was like, I've watched so much LSU. I know that Sloan's going to want to OZ. He loves stretch out a pistol every single time. So from your vantage point, you've written about this as well. Do you think LSU should try to run more counter? This is something that they actually – did practice some. Alex Atkins comes over from a counter base scheme and Florida State. Do you think LSU should be a little more counterish?
Well, I mean, the only reason I say maybe not is because why the hell aren't they doing it then? Like,
yeah,
if you hire Alex Atkins from Florida State, who's one of the best counter as an O-line coach and an offensive coordinator, both at teaching the play, at installing and designing layers and sequencing off of it and different tags and all that stuff, all the ecosystem that you want from a good run game and off of your base play, he's one of the best in the country at it. It was so difficult for LSU to defend. I certainly remember. And I wrote about it back then too. Obviously not knowing he was going to eventually end up our run game coordinator, but the thing that's crazy is that, like, if you're going to – and again, they started last year trying to base encounter because they knew they were going to be a spread team that was going to get a lot of light boxes. So it's a great light box run if you can pull it off, especially because of all the stuff you can do to RPO off it, and the fact that it's it's really hard to get that third, second level defender in the box to come down and defend it. It's not impossible, but it's hard, especially if you're getting moved up front. And the problem is they could not do it up front. They got killed. They couldn't move guys. They screwed up assignments. They screwed up pullers. They same stuff they're doing with outside zone, just with different geometry because the play is different. And so, you know, okay, maybe they just don't know how to teach it. They were an inside zone team with Dembrock because that's his bread and butter. And they had the quarterback and receivers to make that really work because they could, A, steal extra bodies in the box with Daniels, and there was nobody in the box to begin with because it was a free touchdown to Blake Neighbors or Brian Thomas if you did. So, you know, I thought, okay, maybe they just don't know how to teach it, because when that year in 23, when the few times they did run counter, it looked the same type of bad. So, okay, maybe they don't know how to teach it. They go bring in Alex Atkins. You see a bunch of practice clips and everything of them running counter. So it's, you know, okay, now they know that it was the right answer schematically, but they couldn't get it taught. So they go bring in the guy. And now you're coming out and you're trying to run wide zone all the time and duo, which do make sense. I mean, duo is a great schematic play for them. They can't get that right either, by the way. But that's more that, well, that's a physical issue and an assignment issue, but that's a subsequent discussion we'll probably have. But I don't get
it. So they tried that creative Kyle Parker seal the edge duo run twice in this past game, and it got destroyed.
Yeah, I mean, they did a third time with Anderson, and it worked just because they got movement. But that was the one time they got movement, and like it's been mostly a disaster. You slant the front a little bit, they will screw up their assignment and let guys through. They don't get movement, so the linebackers can stay clean, react to the back, and just go to the bounce lane when they bounce, and they can't plug it up the middle when they overlap and all that stuff. It doesn't work. But I don't to answer your question, I don't understand why they're not running counter. And it makes me think that something went wrong with it in practice, which is just it's insane to have that happen. But, you know, it's part of it is just that the offensive line isn't very good. They're not moving people. And I think, you know, I don't know how much of that is teaching. I know how much of this other stuff is, but I don't know. It's to the point of it's such an obvious thing for them to do that it raises suspicion why they're not.
The reason why I was such a slam the table outside zone guy is exactly you just tweeted this out, and it was what I've always said I love about it, is that outside zone has a lot of answers to a lot of different things. All right. I have my response to your tweet, but explain that. That very thing.
Well, I mean, it starts from this very general thesis that if outside zone is blocked properly, you cannot stop it. You can't stop it because it has, and now blocking it properly and things not going wrong, or it's never going to happen consistently.
But
like you can get everybody you need blocked or accounted for with the flexibility of pushing points, with the soundness of zone blocking in general. You don't need an overpowering offensive line to do it because you're moving. And you don't have to shove guys off the ball. It's about technique and teaching rather than physicality. So it's accessible. It pairs well with play action and boots. And so you can build an action, a run action game off of it really, really easily. And, It's just the one thing that's just like that if you do it right is going to work unless your players are just like, unless you're, you know, out there with like FCS players against Peak Save in Alabama, then it's not going
to
work.
Yeah. They'll just blow it up every time.
Right.
But
it's explosive, by the way. You're not sacrificing explosiveness for soundness. It's explosive as hell.
You can
really crease stuff with it.
And they did that a few times versus Clemson, getting vertical. I think Caden's style fits really well with it. That was another reason why.
He's so good. And we're not getting to see what he can do.
Right. And a lot of it, I use this word all the time. It's the choreography. It's the steps. It's everything. Everything needs to be in lockstep. And look, my buddy in Europe, who one of the best offensive minds I've ever talked to, he's like, Carter, you got to have the dudes to do it. And I was like, I don't know if I fully agree with that, but I just need competence.
What don't you need the dudes for then? Like,
right. You know? Right. Yeah.
I mean, you're throwing the ball like 50 times a game and spreading the field. You need a dude, a quarterback.
Before we get to a Garrett rep, you're I would guess you're part of the Lagway hive in terms of his raw ability.
Yeah, I think he's really good. I think there was, you know, he was up and down as a true freshman, but you know, forget the physical skills for a little bit. I think he's definitely ahead of the curve as a processor. As far as his pure pocket operation, and he's so accurate. And now the accuracy hasn't really been there to start this year, but like, he's a really, really good player. I don't think they have great answers for him schematically. I don't think they really have the right identity as far as their offense. Because and this is a little bit less excusable because their offensive line is way more talented than ours. They're having a lot of, and Napier has a huge wide zone background. They're having a lot of the same issues.
Interesting.
It's not quite as bad and quite as ugly, but it's not great either. And so they aren't, the way they build their offense, they play a ton of 12 personnel. They're very condensed with their receivers and everything. They are not a spread you out and drop back and throw team. They're going to try to run the ball, whether that's, you know, duo and outside zone, and they're going to try to build off of that. Their drop back game isn't as diverse as it should be with a quarterback and receivers like they have. And their big problem is that they can't run the ball well enough to run the ball that much. And they're having issues, but and Lagway, I think, is rusty because he missed so much of the offseason with injury. And so I think this is something that in a better environment, we would look at in week six and forget, but I love him. I think he's a dude. I don't think he's really getting much of a chance right now.
Yeah. I hate a head coach that calls plays unless his name is Steve Sarkisian or Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
I've never been a fan of the Billy offense. They do a lot of pistol. And like you said, they do a lot of outside zone. That's what Jaden Ball ended our lives with last year.
He's so good.
Yeah, Ball 13. He's a really, really, really good player. This was a clip that I broke down earlier today on Twitter, and it's gotten passed around a little bit. I appreciate all the support. I'm going to play this at full speed, just so people can have an idea of this play, and then we'll slow-mo it here. And before we get to Max's analysis, it looks as if Bauer Sharp is open in the corner of the end zone, and Garrett rolls out to the right side, and it gets dropped here for a touchdown. So, Max, as I slow this down, when you look at this formation here, third and six, 6:35 left to go in the second quarter, what's the first thing that stands out to you by the pre-snap alignment of the defense?
I mean, considering it's obvious pass, I would say not a ton. Like, because they end up in a slot pressure, but it's not necessarily telegraphed because they have the guy over number three, and the safety is not directly necessarily over him. He is over the number two receiver, so that's not necessarily super telegraphed.
And by number three, what do you mean?
Oh, the third receiver from the sideline, which is green.
Which is, okay. So,
oh, right. I keep forgetting LSU has a receiver that wears number
three. Right. So I didn't want people to get confused by number four and all of that. So the way it's numbered is the outside receiver is always the number one. And then it goes by numbers inwards. So one, two, and three. So Nick, who wears number four here, is the number two in football terminology, and Tre'Davious Green, the innermost slot, is the number three. It also sucks because receivers don't wear jersey numbers in the 80s as God intended. Mm-hmm. So it makes it tougher. So you see this, and my thing is, I see Jaden do this all the time in Jackson Dart. Would you prefer in this situation to read this left to right? Obviously, it just depends on how it's coached, but what would you be looking at here if you were Garrett?
I mean, I would do exactly what he did. I think this is the right play. He's hot, hot off the slot. So like, if that guy comes, you gotta get somewhere. So you either gotta dump it off to somebody, or you gotta make a play athletically, and that's what he does. Like, he's got to abandon his read here. It's not – the look to Sharp is not clean enough to throw it when you're hot.
Thank you. Okay. I so
– it's actually – this is a high-end play here. This is good stuff.
Okay, thank you. All right, so I got absolutely destroyed. Now, I said
– yeah, well, anybody destroying you for that, you get back there and throw this to Bauer Sharp.
Yeah. So the first thing I said in the breakdown, I said, would you like – to hit the wide open touchdown, would you like Garrett to just see this and just get the easy pitch and catch? Yes, you would. But based on the alignment, there's no way that Garrett could have known that the two defenders defending the bottom, the receiver or the tight end and the running back, there's no way that Garrett could have known that at the snap, and I'll just play it, that number seven would be sprinting over there and just leave Bauer Sharp wide open.
Right.
It just happens too fast.
It's now, impossible. Here. Click, I would say pause it right after the snap. Right there. So that guy who he is hot off of because of the protection, because the tackle is responsible for the DN who loops. Now, maybe you could put him on a duel and have him get all the way out there, but you wouldn't do that unless you absolutely knew that guy was going to come, and you never know that, because if we knew that, the offenses would never stop scoring touchdowns. So you're hot, he's hot off of that guy. And so if that guy comes, that is your fucking problem. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but that's
no, it's okay. We'll let it go. Go ahead.
All right. So that is his problem. That is on you. And so at this point, he needs to make a decision, and he needs to either dump it off to his hot, or, which I don't know what that is in terms of this offense, in terms of this play. I don't think it's the running back. It may be the running back, but even then people would get mad because then he would get blown up. I can tell you definitively it's not the tight end running a corner.
Right.
Because
right.
If that's the case, he's going to have to wait to see what that corner does. Cause look at him right now. He has made his decision, and he has had to already make his decision. And you don't know if you throw this right now and that corner reads it and flips his hips, that's a pick. So
it's a pick.
You can't do that. You cannot do that. Everyone would freak out at him for doing that. So no, he makes the right play here, and he throws what should have been a touchdown. Like you get a free runner and you throw a touchdown. Like that's a hell of a play.
So let me ask you this. This was a big debate. And I got absolutely slandered defending Weston Davis on the slot corner blitz. I just think that's a hard pickup here for the RT. I understand
it's
that they were
impossible. Nobody would ask that. Like,
yeah, I was like, that's of course you always want to tell offensive linemen no excuses, find work. But that I don't think a right to it looks bad.
No, because he's getting ready to take the guy, the linebacker who's green dogging. Like
right, exactly.
Well, he's not green dogging because he's spying the quarterback. But like, no. Like again, that's the kind of thing you would only do if you knew he was coming, and then you would slide the entire line to that side so that you can do it. And they're clearly not sliding to that side. So it's no. He makes a Nussmeier makes a great play here. This is a highlight.
And that was my final conclusion.
Like he dusts that guy and then goes and makes a play. Like that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, my only thing would be. Is I guess I don't know it you feel free to push back on this. Maybe it's impossible for me to know this unless I'm Garrett, but pre-snap I would rather work left to right here because I know I'm going to have man-to-man versus those two guys at the top compared to the bottom. Is that fair?
You don't know that. They could rotate out. Like, they could be disguising.
Yeah, I guess so.
And again, once you're hot, your read is dead. You have
to. Yes, of course. Yes, I totally agree on that. So
like, and I think he is reading left to right. He just realizes he's hot and then makes a play. It just doesn't get open in time because he's hot.
And then this is just ridiculous quarterback play. I mean, it honestly is.
Now he makes a play.
And Kyle's just got to catch this. I'm okay if you drop this and make the catch later in the game. That was also a drop touchdown in the same end zone. But look at this.
The way he flattens that throw to keep it away from the defender, too. This is a sick play. Anybody who's mad at Nussmeier is crazy.
It's one of those things, though, Max. Like, you've put – your whole life, essentially, into breaking things down. You understand this, but I think the casual fan that sees Bowersharp running wide open would say otherwise.
I mean, they shouldn't speak definitively about it.
No, yes, exactly.
I try not to speak definitively if I don't understand what's happening, and that happens a lot.
And yeah, I mean, I more so chalk that up to like really, really, really elite quarterback play. And I think the narrative of Garrett Snyder changes if he's able to make that throw right there.
Yeah, he was also missing a bunch of throws.
Yeah, he did.
You
know,
you're playing way too loose in the second half. It's kind of stuff you do when you know you're playing Louisiana Tech and you aren't. And you don't act like the robot you should act like. That would sort of be my coaching point if I were Sloan. I'd be like, you can't have levels. You can't have games cannot be different to you. Like you just got to go out there and make the right play. Play this position to the very, very best of your ability because you're competing against your own standard every single time you're out there. Every single time you're playing the game of football, you can do it as well as you possibly can, or you cannot do that. I don't care if you're playing Louisiana Tech or the 85 Bears. The stakes are the same because you're playing the game of football and you can play it to the best of your ability, or you cannot do that. And anytime you're out there doing that and you're playing loose, you're not focused on and you're not locked in on being as sharp as you can, it's a waste. And I think that's just how I would coach him. But that was the issue to me is that you know, you saw the accuracy suffer, we saw the decision making suffer, but like he took that, like we saw him take a couple awful sacks in this game just because it's like that we know we wouldn't take against a better team. We just know we wouldn't do that.
And C-Dub, I have no fucking problem with him cursing. He can curse all the F he wants. I just try and keep it as PG as possible, unless at the end of the second half of a Clemson or the end of a second quarter of a Clemson game, and you don't kick the field goal there. I obviously went pretty apeshit, to say the least. Okay. This will probably be the final one here, Max. I mean, I want to, once again, just to make sure we're all on the same page, I'm going to show this play at full speed and just get your overall thoughts on it afterwards. And this obviously ends up being a sack, okay?
Yeah, it's pretty fucking bad.
Yeah. So this and I understand it's second and 14 here. Let me see.
This is such a we're up 20-0 in the fourth quarter and it's second and 14 play, which is what bothers me. Like that should not matter.
Right. So we start off here first and 15. Okay. So actually okay,
they ran counter.
Okay. All right. So we'll do this one a little bit quicker this time. So we do get a count actually. Okay, yeah, this is Harlan Berry's counter rep and
dude, he looks good, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got some juice.
Well, the puller took the wrong guy. Like, you got to take that out. Yeah, okay, now I understand it. They're doing the same shit they did last year.
Okay. So, for me, Max, when I look at this, this is a box that you have to be able to run this play successfully on.
Yep.
You're overwhelming them with numbers here. So, for me, an LSU offensive line should never, ever not have this play go for at least 5 yards. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Well, if the box is loaded, sometimes you just have a numbers issue because of the pullers and it's hard to be sound. But, like, yeah, I mean, if you have dudes, which you should be physical. Like, you should be able to move guys. Okay. You're LSU. You have access to the best talent in the country.
And counter is really hard to break down from the all 22. So we'll get to the end zone cam here. But I'll show this first one. We'll show it here. So it's counter GT. With the Shannon.
The design is so good too. This should have creased right. This should have creased right between. Well, they did a nice job boxing it, but it should have gone for like 8 yards.
Okay. So we'll get the end zone copy here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So their problem is that they're not treating the overhang there to the front side like he's in the box. But the problem is like he's the edge defender. He's the end man on the line of scrimmage. He's the force defender because the defensive end is inside the tight end and he's not one of the pullers or anything. So the nickel there or whoever that is the force defender. So the first puller needs to kick that guy out. And the second puller needs to wrap around to the linebacker there in the B gap between 71 and 65, I believe.
Right. Okay. So just to clear this up, you're saying the nickel here is what you would count as a defensive end in this.
Yeah. Run. Yeah. He's the force to, he has to block the end.
All right. Well, so for those, the nickel is standing essentially on the eye of the tiger. So now we get to the end zone copy again. So the nickel is not photoed here, to make sure we're all on the same page. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and run this, Max, and you just tell us where you think this actually went awry with Mr. Harlan Berry.
Well, the first thing I will say is that I kind of take back who should have taken the inside linebacker, I think. Let me just see it again. Yeah, that should be, well, once he overlaps like that, that fucks it up. But like normally you would have Sharp climb to that guy, but he overlaps really hard, which means that they need to be able to adjust on the fly, and the second puller needs to wrap to that guy. So Sharp does the right thing. The second puller needs to, hold on. Can you play that again, actually?
Yeah.
Did they, because I need to see if they twist. I think I'm... Yeah, they don't twist the end. So you got it. Yeah, you got it. First guy has to get to that nickel, or he has to. Well, the linebacker is the first guy there, so they have to adapt on the fly. And the first puller needs to take the inside linebacker there on the edge, and the second puller then needs to adapt and take the second guy to the outside. It's whoever the first guy on the edge is. That is your job as the first puller. You're not going to a man. You're going to a gap. So Thompson takes that guy correctly, and then 75 needs to wrap outside and take that guy who's free.
Right. I see exactly what you're talking about. So Weston Davis needs to be cutting to the left, essentially, of Shanahan.
Yeah. So yeah. Yes. Hold on. Somebody else gets involved there. 65 and 71 cannot lose that. Who gets lost there? Sharp needs to hold that longer a little bit, but like at the same time, like 71 can't be losing that guy. Like he needs to be able to, because Sharp needs to come off this block, so
he can get to that.
To have that guy at that point, and then he loses lever. And 71 was awful, by the way, in this game, running the in the run game. I think he's an okay pass protector, but he got wrecked. You got to give credit to the defense on this one too, because the twist and the overlap and the slot pressure make it a little bit difficult. So sometimes this is going to happen, even for a perfect counter team against looks like this. So it's really hard, but that's ideally how you would draw it up. But the overlap and the slot pressure, it does make it a little hard, but if you're really well versed in the play, you're able to pick stuff up like this. And this is the kind of stuff that they had issues with in all three of the run plays that they run a lot of, when they would twist and they would have guys overlap or they would send pressures or do all this stuff. Everything just fell apart every single time. And so if I'm Florida, I'm just, you know, I'm gaming, I'm slanting, I'm twisting, I'm sending linebackers, I'm sending slots and all that stuff, and they won't be able to run the ball.
We have time for one more. Max, do you mind hanging?
I got plenty of time. I got nowhere to be.
Okay. All right. So coming up right after this, a word from our friends at Labor Therapy. We will break down, to me, one of the more troubling sacks that I've seen Garrett Nussmeier take.
Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LaborTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LaborTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LaborTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their five locations all throughout the Lafayette region.
Big thanks to our friends once again at Laborde Therapy and LaborDetherapy.com. Please book your appointment today. Max, I'll let you. Do you need me to run the play again for you?
Is this the Nussmeier one? Yeah, I totally forgot.
Okay, all right. So he takes a sack here. Have a motion from Harlan Berry. And my initial read on this is the ball should just go to Sharp. But you tell me if you think that this is a horrendous sack.
It's a bad sack for sure. It's just because the ball can always go away or right to your outlet. But it's a bit of a cloudy read just because like the over to the X to Anderson looks great. But like when you have the safety coming down opposite it, you tend to cross it off in your head and it just doesn't look open. Again, this is happening at such insane speed. So like you have that safety down, but because of the pressure, he ends up at the safety to the field, to the passing strength that comes down and ends up right underneath to Sharp. Now you can dump it to Sharp, but it gets picked up. So like, in an ideal world, you're kind of hanging back there and ripping that deep over. But like, once you get pressure, you gotta either get this away or get it down to Sharp. But the safety's coming down. With that safety down and with the slot to the top there running with that other crosser, this will open up to Anderson. Like I want you to find a way to rip this in this pocket. But it's hard because of the spacing. If you look at the other route that's there on the 40-yard line, that's not ideal. It's just it creates an unclean look because that defender could fall off and pick it off. So you can't really anticipate that window opening up. I mean, you can from our perspective, but at the speeds that that's happening, it's just you see that flash and you kind of end up unsure. But I would like to see him find a way out of this pocket and get rid of it before he ends up taking a sack. Like, Unless he just trips trying to step up, in which case that just happens. But like right now, I would love for you to find your way out of this, hold, and rip the over. I think that's what and get it there right now. I think that's what he would do normally. But we'll see from the end zone what happens.
Before we get to the end zone, let me ask you this about the
I also don't know how they teach the read on this play. So it's
right, hard. Right. So. Basically, what Max is saying is we don't know the progressions. It's something that Kurt Warner talks about all the time. Let me ask you about the vertical from Berrion on this play. Berrion is the receiver at the 45 at the top. He's versus Pressman at the top of the screen, and it looks as if he does get a step. Is there ever an instance?
Got to clear the hands there. Got to clear the hands. Just it's not a good release, and he's late.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be at the 35 right now. He's supposed to be at the 20 right now. He's just late.
Yeah, it's kind of clunky getting off the
– Yeah, and it fucks up Nussmeier's read a little bit. Now, again, it's always nice to see where his eyes go. He's at the top here. He's just reading crosser to crosser, and so I think that he's supposed to throw – to Anderson off of a hitch. And it's just not clean. And the pocket sucks because 71 gets beat wide. So we'll see from the inside. Because if he's trying to get out and do the right thing, he just gets tripped. That just is what it is. It's, you know, football's not a very precise game. With all those guys running around there. So we'll see. Yeah, I mean... Yeah, he just gets walked back into the pocket and the entire left side gets caved here. So he's trying to, you see what he's trying to do. He's trying to fade away from it and find the space to throw. Yeah, that's not his fault. He trips. He trips because the entire left side of the line gets caved in. He's trying to fade to his right away from it and get time to throw that ball. But the left guard and left tackle get bullied so bad into him that he just trips, then trying to escape when he realizes he can't. I'm not mad about that. I don't think it's a bad sack. The other one is much worse. When he was trying to extend, just like controller disconnected and took a sack.
Right.
But that's just not that bad. That's on the left tackle and the left guard. He was trying to do the right thing and rip that over.
Hey, that's why I have you on here to push me on these things. I just think in that scenario, when it's second and long, I'm just replacing that blitzer and hitting sharp. But
also reasonable. But like,
right
when you that's really what you're doing when you can't account for the blitzer. When you have everybody picked up like that, that's when you're looking for plays.
Okay. Yeah. So you're saying.
If he were hot off that guy, I would say yeah, but like
right.
you can't get caved in like that. And again, he tried to do the right thing and get out, but he almost did. He just tripped over the guy's ankle.
LSU versus Florida. LSU is a 9.5-point favorite.
Oh boy, I don't know about either of these teams being 9.5-point anything.
Yeah, that's about where I am at this juncture.
Yeah, it's. Who knows? What if Lagway snaps into form? But I will say, if Florida's going to play as much 12 personnel as they want to play and run it as much as they want to run it, they are fucked. Because the LSU run defense is impenetrable. It's insane. And part of that is because they take resources out of coverage by putting Harold Perkins in the slot. But if you're facing a team that's going to play a lot of two tight end and there is no slot receiver, all of a sudden, that becomes an overwhelming strength for LSU unless they have a tight end that can play the slot, which Florida does not. They're both, inline types and inline only. So you're trying to run into those boxes with Jack Pyburn, who has just been devastating as a run defender. He's folding guys like lawn chairs out there. You have Gooden, who is such a nasty penetrator. Guillory, who's a great space eater. Peyton, who is more of a pass rusher, but is still 260 and can throw his weight around. And then you have Whit Weeks, who is unblockable and is so smart in his pickups and assignments and when his gaps change and his overlaps and his fallbacks and all this stuff. He plays so fast and he plays so in command that he's an elite run defender. And Harold Perkins is, the thing that he just does so well, and it pretty much the one thing that he does at an elite level is pursue and tackle, and he beats blockers to spots a lot just by being so fast. So if you're gonna try to get heavy and run on this team, it is not going to work for you, and you are gonna eliminate all the conflict you can create. And so if Florida is gonna try to play that way, they're in trouble.
Actually, I'll write that down. Max has LSU winning by 25 points.
I don't think we're going to score 25 points.
Yeah, that's
if they play that, if they block that way, the way they did, they are not scoring 25 points.
Yeah, and the thing is I've gotten asked so many times, Max, as a film guy, it's like, hey, do you think they're holding anything back for Florida? And I was like, well, it doesn't matter if you're getting your face caved in across the front. And they're like, well, does Braylon Moore change things? And I'm like, yeah, he changes some. But I don't know. I'm always somewhat skeptical of the, we're just holding everything back for Florida guy. Was this the most trap game in the history of trap games early in the season? Yes, of course.
But look, I'm surprised they even crossed the 50.
Right.
LSU's defense is so nasty.
So before we do let you go, make sure you go follow him at MaxToscano1. You can definitely learn so much about Joe Burrow and the Bengals. I know we have a lot of Burrow. I've worn this shirt for 3 straight live streams. Nice. If you want the nitty gritty about why the Bengals start slow every year offensively, which is still the craziest thing to me, go make sure you follow them. Is there anything college football wise that has stood out to you? I mean, I know you and I are both Carson Beck believers even before this Miami start. Is there anything else that's scheme wise, anything that's interest you up to this point?
Not really. Just because college football is not, it just does not have the schematic dynamism it used to with programs having such distinct identities. That's really not the case anymore. Just with all the movement and the death of regionalism, it's unified the sport a little bit, made it a little bit less schematically interesting. Things that have jumped out. I mean, Tennessee's not trying to do what they did anymore. They're trying to run a normal offense. We'll see how that goes. I bet it won't go well. But
oh, interesting.
I mean, it's not going to go well the other way either, because it didn't. We saw what happened last year. It was awful. But you know, we'll see about them. I don't think they're necessarily super relevant.
Interesting. But, I'm in on them.
Really?
I mean,
they've looked great so far.
I'm Aguilard, if you will. So Georgia currently sitting at a 3.5-point favorite. I think Tennessee's been the most impressive SEC team, but I mean, obviously it's just 2 weeks. But yeah, Max is you're on the dogs going to Athens and going to Knoxville and getting it done.
We'll see. I think their offense is terrible.
Yeah. They're so tough to watch offensively around in Georgia.
Yeah. So who knows? You know, I don't know. I kind of miss the schematic ebbs and flows that college football used to have. Like, remember the rise of the spread option, and then the air raidification of everything, and then it still does, because you see all the three high defenses as a result of all that. And they're a huge thing in college football right now, and they've been really fun. But this year, as far as what's really new, it's hard to say. Nobody's really played that many teams, it's hard to say who's good. I think Miami's good, but like, I don't think anybody's great. I think we've kind of had this takeaway over the last couple years with rosters just getting, you know, every roster loses stuff. You don't have there's no team with the waves of dudes anymore. You have dudes at the top, or you don't have dudes at all. And you know, it's I don't know. There's just, I haven't really picked up on anything yet. I think there's a lot of things. I think there's a lot of things that need to unfold. And you know, we'll see. It's wide open. It's wide open.
I'm gonna have my editor, Jace Max AIU, saying South Florida is gonna win it all.
That would be sick. I hope so.
Yeah. A man that is a big supporter of UConn football and everything else under the sun. You motivate me to be better as a film study analyst. And I really do appreciate you always dropping your knowledge, man. And we'll talk to you soon, Max.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me on. I always, always love coming on and doing this.
Yeah. Max Toscano, baby. Love stuff. Love it. So there you go. If you want my full film thoughts on some of the plays, some plays I didn't get to that I had written down here, you could check it out. It is linked down below. And Max, as you could tell, has a college background, but he does do more NFL stuff now. And his NFL breakdowns are amazing. I do NFL breakdowns as well on Power Hour NFL. So we always appreciate Max Toscano. Okay. Now I got a few more. I got a few more minutes here. I will be on Mr. Blake Ruffino's show here in roughly 15 or so minutes. So in the next 5 to 10 minutes, answer as many questions as you possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. Let me know if you like the live streams being a little bit more filmy, because I have gotten messages in the past. Hey, I'm here for the live. I could watch your film studies any other time, but Max is an obvious exception. So let's go to Sibley. Tigers win, Tigers win. It's in the books. Love playing so and winning. I hate to say I'm not going to see Sibley this weekend. I wanted to go to LSU, Florida, but there you go. C-Dub, man, you're my guy. There you go. Let's go to Alexander. Yeah, and that last play, you know, me and Max disagreed. I think one thing about Nuss on that play, and I think it is important to point out, when you compare him to Jaden and Joe and just any other LSU quarterback, this going into the season was the worst LSU offensive line I've seen. Seriously. They're just really strong everywhere else. And now we're here. And we're asking Garrett to find a way to get us through it. And the thing is, you saw how much detail we got into. Those are four total plays. Four total plays. There's a gazillion things that go into an actual coach's film review, which, you know, I always say in my film studies, I don't know how it's taught. It's a lot. I'm just giving you my best educated guesses. Now, I want to get to this, okay? It is so, so, so important I get to this because I have been in the shoes of the person who went viral today outside of actually voting on the AP Top 25. So there's a reporter. Her name is Haley. That's a great name, by the way. And she covers USC football. And she was given an AP Top 25 vote where she ranks all the teams. And she put out one of the worst AP polls I have ever seen. It really was that bad. Now, I'm going to be fair, and this is going to come off really bad, and that's okay. This is just life here when you do sports media. A local LSU reporter also had a tough AP poll in my estimation, and his name is Cokie Riley. And I was going to ask him to come on weeks ago because of a scheduling situation. I had a guest who couldn't do the show. So I was going to reach out to Cokie. I've never met Cokie before. I was going to have him in good faith come on here to talk about LSU a few weeks ago. I was going to reach out, but it was too late. Never met him before. And he also gets an AP poll vote. And his weren't great. And the thing is, this is a prestigious honor. So I have sat in college football press boxes before. And the truth is about press boxes and college football is that, yes, you would like to think that being in a press box makes it easier to cover a college football game. But in many ways, it makes it harder. Okay, I could even argue it's easier to cover a game if you're sitting in the stands. And I could get into a whole spiel about that. I like sitting in a press box. It's been a while since I've done it. I love the camaraderie, meeting other media members and talking to people I've known for a very long time. So I love it. I'm not saying it's terrible, but there's a lot. You got to file stories. You're on deadlines. Got to go interview the players. It is so hard to actually watch the games and put together a top 25 ranking because for 12 hours of the college football Saturday, you're focusing in on your team that you are covering. And if you really pay attention, a lot of the bad AP polls over the years have been local television reporters, local beat writers, not because they don't know ball, but it's also because it's hard to do that. It is hard to watch all these different games where a guy like Reese Davis, sometimes he's doing play-by-play, but he's got a gazillion different resources, right? He's flying to private jets to go call games, and he's got 1,000 different screens at his disposal at all times. It still doesn't excuse the polls that Cokie Riley and Haley, I don't want to say her last name because she's gotten so much horrible press and nastiness and misogynistic stuff thrown her way. But the opposite of that is also true because, you know, I saw Daily Joy, who's one of our best guests. She's a female, and she was saying earlier today, hey, this does not make females that want to work in college football look good, because she still had Florida ranked, the reporter, as a top 15 team when they were thoroughly outplayed and lost to USF. It would be one thing if Florida had beaten the brakes off of LIU, which that game was kind of, and then it would be another thing if South Florida just won on a miracle. That was not the case. South Florida outgained them. So she then said, hey, it's not that big of a deal. It's an AP poll. It's not, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that serious, which is even worse. Why are you discrediting all the other people who actually put the time in to put out an AP poll? So I released my own AP poll and motivated me to go do my own research. And the truth is, it's hard for me to do it. It's hard to keep up with all these different teams and watch all these different games. Even if you only sit, no distractions, you're a single male or female, and you got 1,000 different screens, it's even hard to do that. So I understand that it's very difficult, but it's also unacceptable. You've got, even if you're not able to watch games, you've got to be able to put results on the screen and then basically just go do a simple, to add more context, go watch a 5-minute highlight clip. I try to watch highlight clips at the very least of every SEC game. Then I go to the Big Ten and other teams that LSU are playing. So, you know, it's interesting. Let's go to Sibley. I think Florida has an ugly chance of winning. Are they a bad team, as bad as they seem? No, I think Florida is still good. I had Florida under their win total. I follow a lot of Florida guys, and they weren't too high on this team. It was interesting that there were many in the national media that were super high on this Florida team and super high on DJ Lagway. And I just didn't see it. I thought their wide receiver room was lacking. I think Billy as a play caller is always going to be a losing proposition if he's also the head coach. I also think Florida as a team is incomplete. They've always kind of been overrated as a program. And the schedule was too tough. South Florida is a tough non-power college football team. Okay, non-power four college football team. They're probably the best. They beat the crap out of Boise State. So they also got a little unlucky that South Florida was as strong as they were. But my question to you, if you're very confident in LSU taking care of Florida, do you think LSU would have beaten South Florida with how they played on Saturday? Obviously, the game would have been coached differently and so on and so on. The answer to that is probably not. You probably wouldn't have won the game the way you played versus Louisiana Tech. So I agree with Max. I don't know. LSU is a 9.5-point favorite. It's a pretty big number. Pretty big number. Let's go to Player X. Okay. So this is why I'm happy to have patrons. Lots of compliments here on Toscano. Okay. Because simply some of the ones that they spent their money on aren't really that good. So Player X brings up a pretty hot take, and I'll touch on it briefly here. So there is a famous sports media person who goes by the name of Bill Simmons. Now, I have met Bill Simmons once before. Bill Simmons is a top five sports media personality of the past couple of decades. Nobody would argue to the contrary. And his greatest sports take is something called the Ewing theory. All right. So what the Ewing theory is when one of your star players are out, you actually become a better team, or you just play better in general. Now, that doesn't mean the star player isn't great. It's just something else kickstarts, and there's a lot of different reasons why Ewing theory could be a thing, where you know you've watched all the film with how a team plays with this player, and then that player is no longer there, and it completely changes your style. yeah, that hurts you offensively, but it can also hurt the other team defensively, right? Because what if Florida, for the last couple of weeks, spent so much time working on defense, working against 6'7 players, or getting prepared to play a 6'7 player, or getting prepared to defend against slot fades and the different things that TreDez Green could bring your offense. So what Player X is saying here is, could we have a Ewing theory situation? And it's named after Patrick Ewing of the New York Knicks. He got hurt in a playoff series, and the Knicks ended up playing better without him. And it's because they spread the floor and all these different things. So the truth is, Ewing theory probably applies a lot more than one would think, okay? It's applied plenty of times in college football. There's plenty of college football teams that have had their best teams of all time the year after losing some of their best players of all time, okay? The best linebacker ever at LSU, many would say, is Devin White. Well, 2019 LSU happened after Devin White. The 2011 LSU secondary happened after Patrick Peterson. Now, those two players are on the Mount Rushmore of their positions at LSU. But, you know, there's a lot of different things that go into Ewing theory. So with TreDez Green not being in the lineup, I think that is a plausible scenario, okay? And we'll talk more about that tomorrow, Player X. But to his point, he is saying maybe we're focusing too much on getting the football to TreDez Green. And to that, I would say you're probably right about that. More so last year than this year. But think about it this way. If you throw the football to TreDez Green, he's not a yak guy. He's not a yards after catch guy. So if you throw it, the equity of you getting extra yards after the catch is very small. So his real benefit is in the red zone where we struggle. And that's where he's going to hurt us the most. He's really going to hurt us not having him. Sorry about that. So, yeah, I could see that, Player X. I could see that. That's not a knock on TreDez Green at all. It's not. So who do those snaps go to? Well, one Ewing theory principle that could go into this is LSU last year just had one tight end, basically. So maybe this makes the order of operations easier if Bauer Sharp is just the guy. Obviously, Donovan Green steps up even more. But I don't know. It's an interesting question. It's a very good question. One that I've already pondered. I'm serious. I've already pondered. And for reference, I was actually going to share this thought in Discord. If you go to our Discord, Player X is a member, obviously a patron, you could see me saying, hey, there's a hot take that like is forming in my brain. But I want to be clear. Ewing theory does not mean that a player is bad. It doesn't. It's just like there's very few LeBrons out there where everything just falls by the wayside if he's not there, you know, or Jaden Daniels. So Jaden Daniels wasn't available for the Commanders, the team becomes a 5-win team. There you go. Virginia went to the Final Four year after Ralph Sampson. Georgia did the same year after Dominique Wilkins. It happens a lot more than you think. It doesn't mean that those teams were better or those players were better. You know, we've had a guest on here before say, hey, 06 LSU is better than 07 LSU. One won the Natty, one didn't. But they had the same amount of losses. So, you know, it's an interesting thought. Okay. Now, I will be on Mr. Ruffino's show here in just a moment. And we will talk to you tomorrow. We'll be live at 6. Big thanks to Max Toscano. Please go shoot him a message on Twitter or Instagram. Let him know that you enjoyed his appearance. And there you go. Big thanks to Labor Therapy, Zion Imaging and the Zion 360 booth experience. Once again, there will be no pregame or halftime show for the Florida game this weekend. My apologies for that. Edis! Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight! And thanks to our top super chatter, Mr. John Sibley. Tonight, we are doing chicken. No, it's taco soup again tonight. Let's go. Let's go.